This podcast is brought to you by the film Ezra from Bleecker Street, directed by Tony Goldwyn with an incredible ensemble that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, and Whoopi Goldberg. Ezra is a funny and endearing story about Max, a divorced father struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When faced with difficult decisions about the future, they embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Deadline calls Ezra a touching testament to the power of love. In theaters May 31st.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, listeners, this is Laura. If you love listening to Best of Both Worlds, you might like gathering with us in November to set goals for the next year.
We'll be co-hosting Best Laid Plans Live together this year in Fort Lauderdale from November 7th through 9th, 2024. Come join us for planning and time management workshops and a lot of fun.
Visit theshoebox.com/BLPLive to learn more and to sign up. That's theshoebox.com/BLPLive.
We'd love to see you there.
Hi, I'm Laura Vanderkam. I'm a mother of five, an author, journalist, and speaker.
And I'm Sarah Hart Unger, a mother of three, practicing physician, writer, and course creator. We are two working parents who love our careers and our families.
Welcome to Best of Both Worlds. Here we talk about how real women manage work, family, and time for fun. From figuring out childcare to mapping out long-term career goals, we want you to get the most out of life. Welcome to Best of Both Worlds. This is Laura. This episode is airing in early March of 2024. Sarah is going to be interviewing Maggie Smith, Dr. Maggie Smith, who is a reproductive endocrinologist. She works in the fertility industry. She will talk about how she went through her own journey, right? Sarah, I mean, you can tell us a little bit more about it. What does she talk about?
Yeah. So she talks about kind of two steps of it. First, the choice to freeze her eggs while she was in her reproductive endocrinology fellowship, and then her choice to use those eggs. And I won't give away, you know, all the details, but it was a very intentional path, very thought through. And unlike some going through, she was extremely knowledgeable about all of the nuts and bolts of these procedures, as well as different risks and different chances. So it was really cool to hear it from her perspective.
Yeah. If we sound a little bit different, it's because we're sitting in a hotel room together here in Naples, Florida. Sarah and I are recording a couple episodes live. We're doing the intro and Q&A. For this one, which she recorded with Maggie at another point, but we're enjoying a little time together. But all right, so Sarah, given what Maggie did, she froze her eggs and used them on her own. Is this something you would have ever considered if you hadn't gotten married, you know, when you did?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and similar to her, I don't know, you know, there's two options, right? You could just go straight with a donor, or you could do the freezing and then have a donor. I don't know which I would have picked. I mean, I felt very strongly pulled to start a family by 30. And so maybe I wouldn't have done the freezing step. It's kind of hard to know, especially because I finished my fellowship, you know, my early 30s. So there still would have been lots of fertility left when I was starting my first quote unquote real job and had more resources. So I do think this would have been something I would have considered. And listeners know, longtime listeners know, my sister went down a similar path. My niece is now 4. She is the smartest, cutest little thing. And I mean, that's just a totally different story and a different path and a different lifestyle. But now I see, you know, two great examples of how that can work so well. So yeah, I think I would have done it.
Yeah, it's hard to know because, I mean, I would want to have kids. So I don't know what I would have done if I had, you know, approached age 35 or whatever, and that wasn't looking like it was on the horizon for me. But yeah, I guess so good in life, I never had to come to that to make that decision. Because I think it's very challenging to raise a child on your own, even if you have all the resources in the world. And so undertaking that road, knowing that, I mean, I know a lot of people wind up in that situation, whether they intended to or not, but undertaking that on your own, knowing that's what you're going into, I think would have been a big thing to get my head around. So yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of really cool to listen to Dr. Maggie Smith's journey. And I think she's a very strong person. And yeah, let's hear from her.
All right, here we go.
Well, I am so excited to welcome to Best of Both Worlds, Dr. Maggie Smith, a reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist at Nashville Fertility Center. We also have some kind of long ago connections, and I emailed her by replying from an email from like 2012. So welcome, Maggie.
Thank you. Yes, 2012. I was still in medical school at that time, which is crazy to think about. And I guess, were you a fellow at that time?
I think I was, yes, I was a fellow in 2012, and I would have just had my first baby who is now, you know, about to be 12. So
that's crazy. Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited to have you on and to have this chat and to hear more about your story. So we also seem to have some like random connections and a running connection in common, but we are not going to talk about running on this podcast. We have received some feedback that people would prefer that not be the main focus of it, although I'm always happy to nerd out on it when we can.
Yes.
But Maggie, I guess you can give us a background. You were like an old school blogger back in the day, and you still have quite a presence.
Yeah. So I guess I can't remember when I started a blog. It was when blogs were popular. Gosh, like 2011, 2012. Between my third and fourth years of medical school, I did a year of research. And so I believe it was during that time because, you know, didn't have as much going on as, you know, did before. And actually, it was like a really great way to meet. That plus Twitter at the time was a really great way to meet people. And that's how I ended up meeting so many of my friends in New York City at the time and people that I'm still friends with now. And then also like people that I maybe have not don't talk to on a regular basis, but it's really interesting to see where people have gone in their lives since that time. Because very few of us live in New York City anymore, but it's interesting to see just kind of where people move to, what they did with their lives, you know, children, marriages, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome, which we are definitely going to talk about when it comes to you. So
yes.
You did a bold thing a number of years back, and I believe it was on Instagram, if you correct me if I have the wrong platform. And you shared a story about freezing your eggs. Can you talk about that and also kind of where you were in your career trajectory at the time?
Yes. So I was very fortunate that my fellowship would actually let fellows freeze their eggs for, you know, basically very little. We have to pay for medications, things like that. But ultimately, I was like, wow, why wouldn't I do this? Because egg freezing for most people, honestly, is mostly a financial decision. And if someone were having a flash sale on egg freezing and said, hey, you can do this for $500, a lot of people in their young 30s would certainly do it. So I think, and I always, you know, having done research in reproductive endocrinology and infertility, I just knew that probably the best time really to freeze your eggs is in your young 30s if you can. Obviously, not everybody can or has that, you know, wants to make that decision. But I decided to share it because I feel like there was a lot of like demystifying of the process. I think, first of all, people think it takes months and it doesn't. And I think also that it really takes like 2 to 2.5 weeks for most people. And also that like you're going to be crazy or hormonal or the shots are terrible. And like it's not the worst thing I've ever done. Like, it's not that bad, like in my experience. The other thing too is I think physically there are parts of it that's hard. Emotionally, there are parts of it that it's hard. I think really what was most surprising to me at the time is you kind of have to grieve the loss of the life you thought you were going to live. Like, no one comes into my office thinking, I'm going to have to freeze my eggs, I'm going to need to see a fertility doctor, any of these things. And so I think acknowledging and accepting that like, no one wants to have to do this, you know? And I think that was probably the most surprising hard part about it for me. But I was just glad I was able to share it just to be like, hey, this isn't maybe the, no one really wants to do this, but you can get through it. It's not so terrible. And yeah, so I shared it.
I love that. And you shared like the nuts and bolts and all the specifics. Is that still available if someone wants to like watch that story?
Yeah, it's on highlights, actually. I saved, because I did two cycles, actually. I did one when I was a first-year fellow. So I was 31, and that's actually the cohort of eggs that my daughter's from. And then I did another cycle in, when I was at the end of my second year. And so I think I saved more of that on highlights, like mixing the medications, giving them to myself, kind of, yeah, a little bit of everything. So,
and how long does that process take? You mentioned it's not that bad, but like how many weeks?
From the start of injections to the egg retrieval is about 2 to 2.5 weeks. Then about a week till you get your next period, depending on how you trigger. So it's really not as, I think people think it's like a month's long process, and it really isn't. Obviously, there's a lot of lead up to it. Potentially you go on birth control pills for scheduling purposes and whatnot. But ultimately, like the time intensive portion of your life is a lot less than people realize.
Very interesting. Well, I applaud your boldness and your Thanks. Willingness to share that journey, because I agree. I do feel like you were one of the first people to really talk about it. And the fact that it's a resource to still look at is amazing. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. So what year was that? Actually, tell us one more time, like what was the time frame?
That was, okay, so that was December 2017 and April 2019 is when I froze my eggs.
Okay. And then take us to your decision process when you decided to move forward with things. And I know that's, it's sensitive and like, yeah, whatever you're willing to share.
Well, I think I always knew I wanted to have kids. And by virtue of what I do, I have to say, like, part of my job is being a fertility doctor. Part of my job is being like a therapist, sometimes a marriage counselor, relationship counselor. And so I guess at some point, number one, fertility is not forever. And even though I had frozen my eggs, you don't know how they're going to do, right? You don't know. And the other thing is, you know, yes, you can carry it. You know, the ASRM recommendation is you can transfer up to the age of 54. But like, yeah, I mean, I don't really want to be 50 years old with a newborn. So energy is not infinite either. So I wanted to at least have a child, like kind of within my same group, you know, of friends having children and everything. And so I think the other thing that at least my job actually helped me with was realizing that there are a lot of imperfect relationships. Like there are a lot of, like that marriage isn't necessarily easy. And also I started getting to the age where a lot of my friends got divorced. So I think kind of just seeing that a lot of it, I think a lot of it's like perception, right? Where what if I had just gotten knocked up at some point? You know, like people just kind of, I think it's the perception how you look at it. And ultimately I was like, I know I want children. And at the age at which I was, so I'm now 38. And I was like 36 when I made this decision to do this, 37 when I transferred, or just turned 37. I was like, I'm either going to get a husband or children at this point in my life, but I probably won't get both, and probably not in the timeline that I'm going to want, or at least in that traditional timeline of like marriage, children. So I was sort of like, okay, well, what's more important to me? More important to me was having children, just because I hate dating. I think it's really, online dating especially, it's just very like hard. And I was like, well, the return on investment with this is not great, but I can do this for myself if this is what I want to do. And I have patients that like are like, no, I would never want to have a kid on my own. And that's fine. But I knew that I, even though it's not going to be, I don't think having children ever is easy. And I also thought about it too, when I was thinking about like childcare and all these other things. Even if I had a husband, I was like, I'm going to still need all this help, unless they were a stay-at-home dad, you know? So I guess I was kind of like, really the only thing that having a partner would change is a secondary income. And at that point I was like, well, I have a really good support system where I live. I'm now a fully fledged attending doctor, kind of more settled in my practice. And yeah, I was like, at some point, if you don't do it, you're never going to do it. So I was like, let's just do it. Yeah.
I love that. I have so many questions. We're going to take a very quick break and be right back. Yeah. And I want to hear so much more.
This podcast is brought to you by the new film Ezra from Bleecker Street, directed by Tony Goldwyn, and with an incredible ensemble cast that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, Whoopi Goldberg, Rose Byrne, Rainn Wilson, and Vera Farmiga, along with newcomer William A. Fitzgerald. The film is an endearing and often funny story about Max, a divorced father and stand-up comedian living with his father and struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When forced to confront difficult decisions about the future, Max and Ezra embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Ezra is an endearing and often funny exploration of a family determined to find their way through life's complexities with humor, compassion, and heart. Deadline calls the film a touching testament to the power of love. IndieWire says it's funny and moving. And according to Next Best Picture, Ezra approaches autism with heart and authenticity. Only in theaters nationwide, May 31st.
Today's episode is sponsored in part by Thrive Cosmetics. I am a speed demon when it comes to my makeup routine. I have approximately 5 minutes, or maybe three, between showering and starting my routine of getting the kids out the door for school. And so I'm always looking for products to keep things super streamlined and easy for my everyday look. Thrive Cosmetics for years has been part of that. I've discussed the Brilliant Eye Brightener before, which is a serious workhorse for making me look more awake, but lately I'm also super into their Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara. It's a tubing mascara that lengthens lashes and is super easy to remove as well, which is key because my makeup removal routine is just as streamlined. You can feel great about shopping at Thrive because for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates products and funds to help communities thrive. So refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/bestof. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/bestof, BESTOF, for 10% off your first order.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we are back. And I think that all makes so much sense. I loved your point about you don't know what you're getting in a marriage anyway. So even though some people, and you've kind of witnessed this even in your practice in couples trying to get pregnant, you've probably seen some of those couples dissolve. And so they're left in the same place or perhaps a much more awkward place compared.
Yes. Well, and that's the, I mean, that was the other, is like sometimes, I mean, I've seen great relationships. I've seen relationships where they're not on the same page and this is really becoming like a crossroads for them. I've seen people, I mean, I've seen, if it can happen, I've seen it all. You know, I've even seen a patient who came back to me one time for a post-IVF consult. And at the time I thought, unfortunately, their IVF cycle had gone terribly. And, you know, we didn't actually have any embryos to freeze for them. But as it turned out, when she came back in the interim, she had learned, I guess her husband had lived like a total double life or something. So ultimately it was like a good thing. I was like, well, I guess this is a new positive. So I think everyone, like, I applaud people who are like yourself, who have been marriages that have lasted a long time, and it's wonderful. But I just kind of realized that it wasn't, you know, I have friends that are getting divorced. Like, also, if I got married just for the sake of getting married to have children, and then, you know, got divorced in 10 years, that's not great, right? For me, like that, it's not great to go into a marriage and be like, I just need to get married so I can have kids. And like, this may work out, it may not work out. Like, I really, this person needs to add value to my life if I'm going to bring them along at this point. Like, I was like, I'm pretty happy in general by myself. So if I'm going to add somebody to it, they've got to bring value to my life. So I think at that point, I was just like, at some point, like, life doesn't always, I think it's a very different day and age. My daughter is actually named after the woman, the Black teenager pretty much that raised my grandmother. And I think of like her, and she had a couple broken engagements, got married, had three kids, soon divorced after my mom, you know, she graduated high school. I don't think she could even have her own credit card. I'm not sure she could. I think my uncle had to like co-sign on her house, like, because she was a woman, right? And so I just think of all the advances that had come from that time and how lucky I was that I could do this on my own if I wanted to. Like, I can have my own credit card. I can buy houses as an independent woman, you know, all of these things. So I felt like, really, if you kind of flip it, it's a very positive thing. And as I tell my patients all the time, a child that's wanted and loved, it doesn't matter what the family structure might look like or how that child comes to you. That's all that really matters, I think, at least. So
I love that. I love that. I mean, it sounds very empowered the way you went about it.
Yes.
And also, like, I hear the untethering between like, okay, I want a partner in a loving relationship and I want a kid, but like, I don't need those two to like be linked because the timing may not work out. And at the end of the day, like, the timing of the child matters more than the timing of the relationship.
Yes.
And thus, let's go.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's great. And I think it makes so much rational sense in an area where ration may not govern everyone's actions.
I think people are like scared to do it. I think that's the biggest fear. And actually, what I did was I told people about a year before I did it. So in January of 22, is when I kind of like floated the idea to my parents. I floated the idea to friends. And I'll have to say that, because I think you're like worried about what people will say. Is the thing like, do you know what you're doing? Kids are so hard. They're so expensive. And so then seeing how supportive people were, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I will have to say, like, I think ultimately people are, I like to believe in the good in people, and they're just very, people have been so supportive, so encouraging about this process and like me doing this on my own, and very like interested too, which has been nice. And I really haven't had anyone say like, well, do you know what you're doing? She's not going to have a dad, like all this, you know, no one's really said anything along those lines to me. And, you know, as I like to say, if you're not excited, you're not invited. So if you're not going to like bring joy or happiness, then we're not bringing that energy here.
Love it. All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on to talking about logistics. And I don't mean logistics of the cycles necessarily, although I'm sure you probably share that as well, especially because it's your area of professional expertise.
Yes. Yeah.
But like, logistics of this, you knew you had a support network. What are the things you thought about with respect to childcare, finances, housing, all of those things as you decided to move forward?
Yeah. So housing is interesting. I ended up actually buying a house in the year before I got pregnant, and not because of actually having a child, to be honest, because after living in New York City for so many years, I kind of realized like people do it in these tiny apartments. So like you can, especially as like a little baby, they don't require as much. Obviously, like, it was nice that I bought the house and moved into this house and all of this before I had a child. But I was not as concerned about the housing part just because I had seen what people in New York City do. Obviously, like, something down the road to consider with like backyard, whatever. Childcare was my biggest, I guess, stressor, because there are so many ways you can kind of go about childcare, but it's hard to find a lot of times. It's expensive. And that really, I was like, I almost need, so I like looked into several different things, an au pair, looked at a full-time nanny. My nephews are in daycare. And so at least having seen them be in daycare and really like it, I felt good about that as well. But then also they get sick. They're going to have to come home from daycare like today. I thought, so really, actually, my mom is the one who brought this up to me. She was like, found some article about something called a family assistant. And what she was saying is like, you really need someone to do stuff for you. So that way, when you come home from work, you're able to then spend time with your child, and which is so true. So I ended up enrolling Scout, getting into daycare, which is very fortunate that I got into one because I put myself on waitlist before I got pregnant and only got into one. And it's crazy. So then, and then I hire what's called a family assistant. I call her my family assistant. She works 25 hours a week for me. And what she serves to do is she comes during the bulk of the day where she'll do stuff around my house, you know, take my dogs out, laundry, all these little things. Like yesterday, she picked up pictures that my daughter, her 3-month-old pictures, and or like go buy the birthday present, whatever it is. So, but if Scout gets sick, like if I were at work today, she could go pick her up and bring her back to my house. And I'm very fortunate that I arranged my schedule that my assistant ends at 3. Now she could always go overtime or whatever, but when I end patients, I could hopefully be home pretty quickly after. I would still have to document, probably call people and whatnot, but I could do that either another day or later. My biggest stressor was figuring out the childcare piece and how expensive it was going to be and figuring out like really what I could afford and then just kind of like getting this lined up. How do I go about finding this family assistant? Ultimately, I used an agency. So all of this was very, I would say it's not cheap is what I will say, but I feel ultimately it worked out well for me. I feel very fortunate to found good people. And then even when you have all this lined up, you're still going to have that chaotic day or there's a snowstorm and no one can get anywhere where you're just like, I'm doing telehealth at home, seeing patients with my daughter in the swing, watching Miss Rachel, and we're just going to have to live with it.
Yes. Like sometimes there's just no perfect backup. I'm curious because one thing we've told people on this podcast is that it can be very difficult to find someone excited to do part-time work.
Yes.
Whereas you have found, it sounds like, that unicorn. And any special recruitment or I don't know, what would you say if someone was having trouble finding that?
Yeah. So I worked with an agency and at first I was going to hire this person for like 40 hours a week, but then realized a couple of things just logistically. I don't really have 40 hours a week of work for someone around my house. Like I'm sure I could find things for them to do, but like that's a lot to do. Then the other thing too is at some point, if you exceed a certain number of hours that you have this person employed, you're going to have to pay taxes and whatnot, like as a W-2 employee, which is hard. But ultimately when I advertised for it as like 20 to 25 hours a week, I said my hours were flexible because they're going to need a second job, right? And so it ended up working out great that the person who works for me, she actually does pick up and drop off for another family so nearby. So she does like the morning pick and dropping off at school, comes to me, and then leaves me and goes and picks up at school and brings back home and whatnot. So that kind of worked out well. And when I advertised, I also said I'm very flexible on what hours this is with their during the day. So that way, at least should they need something out to do something else, which they will, for the most part, that I could say, okay, well, this is where I can flex it to be 9 to 2 or 10 to 3 or whatever it was. Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Offering that flexibility, I think, is unique and might change as your kids get older, because I'm picturing like, okay, and then when they have to go to dance class, you may not have that flexibility. But this is a reminder that like we don't have to plan that many years in advance. Like figure out what works now.
Yes. Like I was like, my assistant is like, we signed a contract for a year. And I told her, like, I would love for you to stay long term, obviously. But I said, my needs will probably change as she gets older. Right now, she's in daycare and that covers most of the workday. So she's kind of backup. But as Scout gets older, you know, yeah, there'll be after school activities or all these things that then I'm going to have to probably, you know, would have to shift her. And that might look differently, but we can cross that bridge when we get there. Right now, she's not going to dance class. She can't even sit up. So, yeah.
I think that makes total sense. Yes. Yeah. Like you're dealing with this and you'll keep your mind open. But no, that sounds awesome. And actually not a solution we've really talked about before. So I'm excited because we've talked about a lot of different iterations, but having a part-time, wait, what did you call it again?
Family assistant.
A part-time family assistant.
Yes.
Sounds like it makes total sense in combination with daycare.
It's actually the best thing I've ever done because when I come home after work, I pick Scout up at daycare, I come home, my house is clean, the counters are wiped down, which is always like a wonderful thing to me. The dishwasher's empty, the bottles are prepped for daycare the next day. At least like I'm not coming home to complete chaos. And so that to me seems really nice. And yeah, it just, everything takes time. And you know, time is your most important, I guess, resource. And so, yes, could I go on my day off to go get the birthday present for a birthday party? Yes, but maybe I want to do something else with my, you know what I mean? Like if I can, you know, it's fine, but like someone to go, for me to drive to go 15 minutes to the place to get it, you know, all of that, just the more I can have someone help me do stuff to then ultimately spend more time with my daughter or do something for myself, like run or something, is great.
Yes, just enjoy your life more, which you fully deserve and have worked really hard for.
Yes.
Tell me about going back to work. How did that go? That reentry.
Oh my God. So going back to work. So I had a night nurse a good bit, which was great because that was really what saved me probably the first two months, almost 3 months of her life. And so at some point financially, I was like, well, I either go back to work or I give up the night nurse. And I was like, I want the night nurse. So, because that just being able to sleep really was helpful. So going back, I think it was hard because my brain just didn't function as fast anymore. And I used to see like 11 to 13 patients a day. And I was like, I'm going to see 3 a day. And that seemed like a lot the very first week. I was like, oh my gosh, how did I used to do this like so much faster? So I think it took a couple of weeks to just like, be, and also then you're also figuring out all the logistics of your new life, daycare, you know, get what time she wakes up, feeding her, daycare drop off, then coming, all of this stuff. And so it ended up, I would say by the time, so I went back right before Thanksgiving, kind of by the time we got to the new year. And now I feel much more in a routine. I'm kind of back up to my normal volume. So I thought it was just giving myself time to kind of start slow and ramp back up to my usual volume with that, because it just takes you longer to get, I was like, and then figure out when you're going to pump, if you're doing that, you know, all of that, just all these new logistics. And I just told my staff when I was like making my templates for patients scheduling, said each month, just come back and revisit with me before we schedule open and for the new month is open, because this is going to continue to evolve. So like, for instance, I used to start at 8. Now I start at 8:30 because I get to the office still at 8, but I pump first and then see my patients. And I don't actually need a break until lunch to pump. So I'm like, it just like everything. I was like, just keep coming back to me because this is going to keep evolving. But yeah, really the brain not functioning quite. I just remember being like, how did I type notes this fast? How did I do these? You know, all of that was hard.
And that's awesome that you're at a place that allowed you to do that ramp up, because unfortunately, I'm not sure that that's an across-the-board medicine phenomenon.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm in a private practice, which we own, like where it's physician-owned. So yes, we can have that, which is really nice. That's a very much a luxury. I remember thinking as I got to 12 weeks, I went back after 9 weeks. 12 weeks, I would have felt pretty good. I think I would have felt like mostly like, okay, going back, I think 16 weeks, because at that point she was starting to sleep more through the night. So I think like really if I were having to go back up full volume, I would have needed like 16 weeks minimum. Really, we should get more maternity leave, but that's another conversation.
Yes, that could be another edition of the podcast. I'm with you.
Yes, yes.
Awesome. What would you say has been the most fun part of this journey so far and the most challenging part? Let's get both flip sides. You can start with whichever you prefer.
I think the most fun part has been seeing how excited my friends are. Actually, for like friends and family, that is, just seeing how excited everyone was and how everyone was really interested in wanting to take part. So like actually 2 of my best childhood friends came to my induction. They were like, can we come? And I was like, you do know an induction takes a really long time. Like, I'm thinking of this from the perspective of a former OBGYN resident. And I'm like, you want to sit on labor and delivery all day? Because I'm just knowing how long an induction takes. And my induction started at night and they didn't come to the next day. And I ended up having a C-section, but they wanted to be, and I was like, wow, that's so nice. Like, sure. Actually, it was quite fun because after I had my epidural, I just sat there and we talked all day until I ended up having to have a C-section. So I think that has been the most like exciting part and just everyone's overall excitement for me. Then I think the hardest part for me has been figuring out, like, I have the work days figured out, but the non-work days, then being, because I like always knew I would need help on work days, but then not having help on the non-work days, I'm like, oh, I actually need to probably schedule some sort of babysitter or something so I can go on a run or go to the office if I need to, or whatever it is, like acknowledging that just like, if I don't schedule it, essentially, it's not going to happen. So if I don't schedule and plan for my time to run with either childcare or whatever it is, because naps are not quite solid enough yet to really know that's going to work out, then it's not going to happen. So I think that's been the biggest challenge is like coming to terms. I knew I was always going to need help, but I thought, oh, on my not work days, I'll be fine. Then acknowledging like, oh, no, you're going to need help on the non-work days too. I will say in the very beginning too, it was because you're changing all the diapers, right? I was like, it would be really nice if someone else can change a diaper. But then I did think to myself, well, it would be nice to have someone else to change diapers, but it would also be worse if I had someone that I was like, can you change the diaper? And I'm resentful towards them having it, you know? So I was like, it may sound nice to say I have someone else to change a diaper, but you just don't know, you know, again, how that might play out.
Totally. There could be complicated parts that you are not having to deal with, which can be a positive. That is, yes, an awesome way to look at it. And I applaud your thought about getting some help on the weekends. I mean, on this podcast, we talk about either hiring that out or figuring out some kind of swap with a co-parent. But since there is no co-parent, then your answer is to either a family member or a babysitter. And either way, yeah, your baby will be in loving hands and you need a break. You're going to need a break. So,
it's, I mean, yeah, yes. I mean, I was like, people that like, I remember as well, like, when she was really, I was like, gosh, you really can't stay home with it. I mean, you can, but it's mind numbing because also you're just living in this constant 3-hour cycle of like eat, awake, sleep, and like all this stuff. And especially when they're like right now, she's still not quite at the point where the naps are very, I know exactly when it's going to happen, how long it's going to be, so on and so forth. And the other thing too, that I found really hard postpartum was like, my life was so varied in terms of work, house renovation, redecorating, pregnancy, my friends, all this stuff. And now it went to just this one thing where it was like, when's she going to eat? How much did she eat? Did she, you know, did we, you know, all this other stuff. And I think it was just like, oh my gosh, now my entire being is consumed with this one thing. And especially the newborn sleep part of it. That to me was really hard. I didn't know that newborns were such loud sleepers and that like, and the other thing too is all, I felt like the sleep part just continued to evolve. Like for a while, she couldn't like lay on her back because she had reflux. All of that was like, just, you go crazy.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. And it's a lot to deal with someone, and probably even harder. I hope you have a big tribe of like online or real friends, like in real life friends, because yeah, the number of hours I spent Googling some sort of looking for the internet, like it was going to have some magical sleep solution on there. Yeah. It's like, it's not on there. Like,
yeah, I bought every book, asked every, when did your child start sleeping the night? How do you do this sleep training? When can you do that? And actually my daughter's kind of on the small side. She's 11 pounds at 5 months. So she's kind of a petite thing. So, you know, a function of it is of weight, like in, when they can. But I think ultimately, like my I remember I was really like, can she have acid reflux medicine or whatever? My pediatrician was like, I just don't think she needs it. Like, you can, but then she went through all this stuff with me. I was like, all right, you're right. But she was like, ultimately, it just takes time. She's like, they just have to get bigger. And she was right. You know, I was like, you were right. And then I just remember my 2-month appointment also asking her, when am I going to have a bedtime again? And she was like, probably around 3 months. And she was right about that. You know, now she pretty much consistently goes to bed around 7. And I'm like, okay, so it's very helpful to know, okay, it's 7 o'clock. She's going to be in bed for the night. She'll probably wake up somewhere between, you know, it's 5:15 to 6:15. And that to me is like, okay, at least I know then. I may not know naps yet, but yeah, ultimately, like I was like, time, them getting bigger, and just the only constant is change right now, essentially.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I'm having so many flashbacks. So before we close, I wanted to have you, well, two things. I hope she has to run back to daycare, by the way, everyone. Like she literally got called that her baby is a little sick and she has to head in. So this is very reality. But any advice you would give to someone contemplating a similar journey?
I think, and this is what I tell my patients too, you have to decide, like, not decide, but think about, what do you want for your life? Not what you think society wants for your life or what you think is, quote, right, but what do you want for your life? And there are some people who will say, my life will not be complete without having biologically related children or a child in some way, however it comes to you, whether it's through egg donation, embryo adoption. But if that's something that's important to you, I think there's a lot of things with being in 2024, social media, all these things. But one good thing about it is that, and I don't want to say alternative lifestyle, but just like, I feel like now it's great that like this whole, that people live a variety of different lives or ways of living. Like it's not just like the nuclear family of mom, dad, two kids and all of that. Like there are so many different types of families. And overall, I think people are very accepting of that and want to help. Actually, on my street, which is crazy, two houses down is another single mom by choice that she just, and she's probably, her son's like 10. So she's like older, you know, like this is a very different stage of life. So I think the other thing is like, I think a lot of people think it's going to be easier if I have a partner. And I'm sure there are parts of it that's easier, but I think having children is hard in general, like just hard, like it's good and it's hard. And so I think just not letting the hard things scare you, because ultimately what I found, like, through residency, fellowship, all these things, you figure out a way to rise to the occasion. Like you just figure it out. So that, and then I think don't be like afraid of public perception, because that was one of my fears, was like the fear of public perception, and no one cared really, which was good. So yeah, I think ultimately like just going, if it's something you want, like I think my saddest patients who, I have a lot of sad patients, obviously, but I think some of my saddest people that come in are like, people who are like 38, 39, 40, and they want to freeze their eggs because they haven't found the right person, but they want to have kids. And then I'm giving them the reality statistics of like what this looks like. And they realize that like with egg freezing, their chances, while they're not zero, they aren't as good as they thought they were. And they're kind of just, they're in a huge stage of grief. And so, yeah, so I think ultimately like deciding, knowing that fertility isn't forever, and if family is important to you, like you can make it happen.
I love it. Well, with that, do you have...
Oh, and I have one final point.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have one. I also tell patients or some friends of mine as well, it's like, I think people think you have to be, you must be a parent to have an impact on a child's life. And I tell people, like, I had also come to terms with, if I didn't have children, I have nephews. I could be a really great aunt and I could be really impactful in the lives of my nephews, even without being their biologic parent. And so I think there are so many ways to be involved in a child's life outside of biologic parenthood, and not to discount that. So,
oh, that's beautiful. Would you have a love of the week to share with our audience?
So I have a couple things outsourcing. Yay. Outsourcing. Woo-hoo! Outsourcing is where I was like, once I became an attending, and even just very recently, I'm like, you know what? Like one of my older partners in my practice said this to me. He's like, Maggie, there are certain things that only you can do. As a reproductive, this is with respect to work. He's like, and there are certain things that someone else in your practice could do for you. Like calling patients about their normal CBC. He was like, you don't need to do that. He's like, that's nice that you want to do that, but you can only do certain things. So I think that's, I look at like my life as well. Like there are only certain things I can do, but there are certain things I can outsource. So I like that. And I think, and to that end as well, like just making that like outsourcing / finding that time to do whatever it is you need for you, whether it's 2 to 3 hours. That's like embracing help, even if you think, like in my mind, I'm like, am I getting too much help? Am I not spending enough time with her? And it's like, no, you spend a lot of time with her. It's fine. Like if you need a babysitter for 3 hours so you can run, shower, and do whatever, like those 3 hours, like she might be napping for part of that. It's fine. She won't know the difference.
She will not know the difference. I guarantee it. Even if it was 4 hours,
give you permission to extend
that window if you decide to train for a marathon, which we're not going to talk about on this podcast. But I love it. Yeah. Those are awesome. So outsourcing, did you say you had more or is it just all the types of outsourcing? Is your love of the week?
All types of outsourcing. I was trying to think of anything else that I love this week. Oh, I still really love like paper planning. Like, and you'll be, woo-hoo! I know you'll like, yes. Okay. So that to me, I really enjoy. So I have this family pad thing that I have from Sugar Paper LA. And that is one of my like best purchases of 2024. And that's how my assistant and I communicate and everything. It has by day and I can make all these check marks and boxes and on the to-do list, all this stuff. But yeah, I think that is like on my love list for sure of like, I have multiple paper planning things, but that like week to week family planning pad is one of my loves of the week.
If you send me the exact link, I will put it in the show notes.
Yeah,
my love of the week this week is wide leg pants because I'm just embracing the like new silhouette. I feel cool in my wide leg pants. Like I don't know why it took me so long, but I feel like I'm into it. So
yeah,
that's my love of the week.
Great. I love it. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was so much fun. We have to talk more.
Yes.
Offline of the podcast. And maybe if we ever do like another like IVF theme show or some kind of like repro endo show, we would love to have you back to talk more about like those medical specifics. You would not be the first OBGYN to appear on our podcast. And we've had some endocrinologists as well. But, you know, these are very salient topics for our listeners. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Oh, and where can they find you? Where can they find you? Sorry. Last question.
Yeah. I probably need to change my handle. It's MBS Thinks. I used to have a website, but somehow it got like hacked by some sort of Russian thing. So I'll have to figure that out. That happened right as I was delivering. And I was like, I don't have the brain space for this right now. So there. And then also my practice is Nashville Fertility Center. And that's where I see patients.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
All right.
Well, we were back. Sarah was interviewing Dr. Maggie Smith about various aspects of fertility and her own fertility journey, raising a child on her own. So coming to another related question with pregnancy and things like this, Sarah, you want to read this one?
Sure. Okay. So this is, yes, very much on theme for the episode. And it comes from a listener who says she is 30 and the podcast serves as a big sister or mentor of sorts. So I just wanted to share that part because it made me really, really happy. Super cool. I love having listeners actually in every part of the kind of age and career journey spectrum because we have others who have kids out of the house. All right, I'll get to the question, but I just thought that was super sweet. Okay, so she writes, I am recently pregnant, but really struggling with first trimester nausea and fatigue, especially when it comes to work stamina. I work full-time and I have a clinical type role in hospital. I'm 8 weeks in and I don't know how to navigate addressing these symptoms, especially at work since I haven't told anyone, and I'm extremely active and struggling with how these symptoms impact my energy and motivation to do my usual physical activities like running and strength training. So do you and Laura have tips or old posts, et cetera, for navigating this difficult period in the first trimester when it's really symptomatic, but maybe not out in the open?
Yeah. I mean, just thoughts go out to you because the first trimester is often terrible. And this is something that I think it comes as a psychological shock to a lot of folks because, I mean, A, we don't know that many people who are in their first trimester because a lot of people do keep it secret for various reasons, which makes sense. I mean, I've miscarried in the past. And so I understand why you don't want to like tell people and then have to tell them again. But it does, in fact, feel terrible. And you've gone from being this healthy, active woman doing everything. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple weeks later, you are on your back, unable to move like half the time. You're so tired, you're nauseous, you feel awful. And I think people are just like, whoa, like, how did this happen? Is this, you know, eternal? Am I now like screwed for life? And the truth is no, generally not. For the majority of people, the symptoms are going to get quite a bit better by about 13, 14 weeks. So you can hold out hope for then. Maybe you'll make yourself a little calendar, like an advent calendar of when my symptoms will get better. There's some percentage of people who don't, But obviously, if you're suffering from severe nausea or something like that, you can probably get some medical treatment for that too. So consider that. As for your responsibilities, I mean, really just take it down to the stuff you absolutely have to do. You can cancel things, like you can strategically take sick days if you need to. I mean, this is the time you call it in and go from there.
Yeah. I mean, if you are flat out feeling miserable, I guarantee you it's not in your head. If you're in your first trimester, like you probably really do feel terrible if you're having all those symptoms. So please be easy on yourself, because you're probably a very hard worker. It sounds like you are from what you've written. And so this is a perfect time to just coast a little, do the essential. And I will address the exercise portion of this as well, to tell you that it is totally okay to kind of go off and on with exercise during pregnancy. There were definitely periods where I did much, much, much less, or really even maybe stopped for a week or two just because I didn't feel it, and then was able to pick it back up. And really, the intensity that you exercise during a pregnancy, it doesn't matter. I mean, in retrospect, like I'm sure I sort of cared about it at the time, like, oh, I'm still running. But like if I had been inclined walking or like moving really slowly on a bike or like, you know, whatever, it probably wouldn't have made a big difference. I mean, as long as you're doing something, what you feel up to is probably what you should be doing, because honestly, these are probably your body signals telling you that it wants to take it a little bit easy right now. So I would honor that and don't assume it doesn't mean you'll won't be able to, wow, there's a lot of negatives, but pick it back up when the second and third try come along.
Yeah. I would also say that you do have the choice to tell some people if you think that would be helpful in your situation, if you think people would be more understanding and you're okay with the idea that if something went wrong, you could go back and tell them again. But if you think it would buy you some more understanding, then it might not be a horrible idea to tell a few trusted folks about it. And I would say, I mean, from my personal experience, if you are really, really sick, it may mean that it's really, really taken. So I'm not saying things won't go wrong, but I mean, hopefully not. But that's often a sign that you're well on your way. So anyway, we're really cheering for you, hoping that everything goes well. And yeah, that you'll be back to your usual self soon enough.
Yeah, I always said I'd rather be 40 weeks pregnant than 7. So it's going to be better.
It's going to be better. We hope. All right. Well, this has been Best of Both Worlds. Sarah was interviewing Dr. Meggie Smith about her fertility journey and freezing her eggs, having a baby on her own. We will be back next week with more on making work and life fit together.
Thanks for listening. You can find me, Sarah, at theshoebox.com or at @the_shoebox on Instagram.
And you can find me, Laura, at lauravanderkam.com. This has been the Best of Both Worlds podcast. Please join us next time for more on making work and life work together.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.